Now, over the weekend, President Trump signed 4 executive orders and memos to address the economic impacts of the coronavirus pandemic.
Through these 4 actions, my administration will provide immediate and vital relief to Americans struggling in this difficult time. And the beautiful thing about this difficult time is we're now coming back and setting records. We'll also ensure that our economic comeback continues full speed ahead.
These orders come after Congress didn't reach a deal on another round of coronavirus relief. Our next guest joins us for a look at the president's executive actions, whether they're constitutional, and the role of executive action like these in general. Daniel Gitterman is a professor of public policy at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He's written a book on presidential power titled Calling the Shots, The President, Executive Orders, and Public Policy. Daniel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, thanks so much for having me back.
Well, you've written the book on executive orders. Are these 4 orders from the president over the last week here in line with what we've seen in the past?
They are absolutely in line. He'd issue 3 memos and 1 executive order. They're pretty similar. The memos are usually directives to the head of a federal agency. Clearly with the failure of Republicans and Democrats in Congress to come to the agreement, he decided to use some authority to act, at least in the short term.
Are we seeing this kind of executive action getting more common lately, given the partisan divides in Congress and the inability to reach decisions on stuff?
I absolutely think both Democrats and Republicans in recent decades and presidencies have increasingly made use of this power, particularly during times of partisan stalemate. Some prior predecessors probably didn't sign them with the fanfare that this president commands. His usually are formal, either press briefings in the Oval Office, or in this case, his summer vacation.
I want to give a listen to then candidate Donald Trump talking about executive orders at a rally in Janesville during the presidential campaign. This is back in March of 2016. This comes from C-SPAN.
I want to not use too many executive orders, folks. Executive orders sort of came about more recently. Nobody ever heard of an executive order. Then all of a sudden Obama, because he couldn't get anybody to agree with him, he starts signing them like they're butter. So I want to do away with executive orders for the most part.
So is it easy for somebody outside the White House to say executive action is bad, but the temptation to really be there once you're a president?
I think the incentives are the same for Democrats and Republicans once they get to the White House. And obviously, when you don't like the party that controls the White House, you tend not to like their unilateral actions.
Now, let's take a look at these particular orders. One thing that people have focused in on is the use of funding from some emergency relief funding from FEMA, taking that money and putting it into unemployment relief. And some people have said, wait a minute, that goes beyond the president's executive power because Congress is supposed to be the one that decides on the purse strings. What do you make of that particular use?
I think they tried to hide unemployment compensation within the statutory guidance that was given to Homeland Security and FEMA to give disaster relief. So, in a narrow sense, my guess is it's probably constitutional. There are 2 pieces of additional information that are important to your listeners. One is that it's not unemployment compensation; it's disaster relief. It allows $400 per recipient, $300 coming from the FEMA disaster relief, but your home state governor is going to have to come up with the additional $100. And so much of this shift, and there's only enough money in the disaster package to last about 4 or 5 weeks. So it will get some folks just over to the Labor Day holiday. It will be $400 versus $600, but it's entirely contingent on governors and state legislators being able to identify the funds to pay the $100 per participant. So the politics are going to shift pretty quickly in the next 4 weeks to the State House.
Talking to Daniel Gitterman, professor of public policy at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, talking about President Trump's recent executive actions and how executive orders and executive memos work in general in the American system of government. Daniel, is there a lot of wiggle room like this for presidents to say, well, yeah, I'm going to fix this unemployment problem, but we'll call it disaster relief? Or in the case of President Obama, we're going to do this thing that we wanted Congress to do with deferred action for childhood arrivals, but we're using our powers of prosecutorial discretion, not actually changing the law. There's a lot of room for action, isn't there?
You know, the in my book, I refer to the president as the CEO of the federal bureaucracy. And so all those secretaries, these three orders have a memorandum to the Secretary of Education on student loan debt, Secretary of Treasury on deferring payroll taxes, and the Secretary of Homeland Security and FEMA to try to use whatever discretion within the statutory guidance that they got from Congress. And in each of these cases, it appears, although temporary legal efforts to try to deal with relief in the failure of the deal, the interesting politics will be what happens when they come back to September and these temporary measures are over.
I've seen people make the case over the years, Daniel, that the balance of power has really shifted in recent decades, I don't know how far back you want to go, from the legislative branch and Congress to the executive branch and the president. Do you see that happening, first of all, and how big a part of that, if so, are these executive actions?
Absolutely so. And in order for the president to be checked, one of the other branches have to engage in the checking. The courts, for the most part, have been pretty deferential, with some exception to efforts of presidents to act unilaterally. And it really requires Congress to assert its power and responsibility to try to override or block the president. But that requires, for the most part, large majorities and often a two-third majority. If Congress wanted to override one of these executive orders, it would have to both get a majority vote and then sustain a veto on the second round.
Well, speaking of the legislative branch, I want to give a listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on CNN this Sunday talking about the executive actions.
My constitutional advisors tell me they're absurdly unconstitutional. But right now, our focus, and that's a parallel thing. Right now, the focus, the priority has to be on, again, meeting the needs of the American people.
And one of the questions there for House Democrats was the idea of, well, should we sue the president over the executive actions, which would not be unprecedented. I believe Republicans in the House sued the Obama administration over DACA. But that's a little weird. The legislative branch, which has the power to write laws if they want to, turning to the third branch of government to tackle the other one.
Yeah, I don't foresee that there's going to be an immediate court challenge on this. I mean, I am not a law professor, but many of the analyses I've read by some law professors and legal scholars suggest that for the most part, these would probably withstand scrutiny. I think one thing that the president has played to his advantage in impeachment and all these other efforts is he realizes it takes time for the courts to make these decisions, and the political benefits come immediately and are short term, which is exactly what he was looking for.
Talking to Daniel Gitterman, professor of public policy and an expert in presidential executive orders. We're looking at the policy and politics behind President Trump's recent executive actions on COVID-19 economic relief. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the four executive orders signed over the weekend? How would you like Congress to respond? Would you like to see them pass some kind of COVID-19 economic relief package? And what do you think of the use of executive actions, whether it's by a Republican or Democratic president? Do you worry that they get used too much? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the executive orders and memos President Trump signed over the weekend. Daniel Gitterman is with us, professor of public policy at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, author of Calling the Shots, The President executive orders, and public policy. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these particular orders from the president? Are they significant? Do you worry that they exceed his power? Would you like Congress to do something to make them irrelevant, in effect, by taking action? In general, do you worry about the use of executive orders, executive memos by presidents to do stuff even when Congress doesn't? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like your guest to comment on one of the big impasses that they currently have in the legislative branch that is blocking relief for the pandemic. Specifically, the Democrats are asking that a large sum of money be allocated to mismanaged blue states, such as Illinois, that have huge deficits. They want to use the pandemic to pay off the debt that goes for mismanagement of the state finances. And the Republican side is saying, no, we're not going to allow you to use the pandemic for mismanaged financial situations. I would like to say, what do you do in that situation where they are blocking needed relief for people due to a political situation that for unrelated mismanagement?
Charlie, thanks a lot for the call. Not too much time left. That's the Republican characterization. Democrats saying we're trying to get support to all state and local governments to deal with COVID-19. But Charlie pointing correctly to that being one of the sticking points here that led to the need, as President Trump saw it, for executive action. What do you think, Daniel?
Absolutely. I mean, there were multiple parts of this. Some of it was aid to localities and states, and the lack of agreement and concerns about the deficit caused a stalemate. And some of these other important measures on unemployment and other forms of relief are still left undecided.
Thanks a lot for the call, Charlie, at 800-642-1234. You can also post, by the way, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on another caller now. Jim is with us in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm wondering, it was my impression that this administration has used the executive directive or executive power quite a bit less than the previous administration or two. I'm wondering if you have the numbers for those.
Yeah, what do we see in the trends of the use of executive orders, and where does the Trump administration stack up, Daniel?
You know, I have not seen the latest numbers. I think I looked at them after maybe year two and year two and a half, and the numbers were on par with his immediate predecessors. There's a belief he's done more. There's some belief he's done less. I would say he's done about the same, but commands a lot more attention when he signs them.
Thanks for the call, Jim. When we look at the last couple of administrations, though, is the general trend upward for presidents to do this more?
I think you, historically, no. FDR issued far more. But I would say since probably during the Republican takeover of Congress in 1994, you certainly saw an uptick in the use of this when things broke down in a partisan stalemate.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jim. Time for one more caller. Mitch is with us in Plover. Mitch, hi.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
What'd you want to bring up, Mitch?
I had a question on what effect the payroll tax deferment would have, because as I understand it, it is just a deferment, so it's still going to be due at the end of 2021 or whenever that executive order ends, and how that's going to affect businesses that don't pay it at the time when the time comes due, or are people going to continue paying it, and how that's going to affect.
Thanks a lot for that call. It sounds like you dropped out there, but Daniel, you got the gist of that payroll tax executive order. How does that all play out?
I did. It is temporary. I believe goes through December 31st. Now, the president promised if he was reelected, he was going to make the payroll tax cut permanent, but a permanent payroll tax cut and its implications for cuts in Medicare and Social Security financing does not have much bipartisan support.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last minute or so, Daniel, what are you watching for when it comes to the future of how presidents use these executive orders and memos?
I think regardless of party, one has to just appreciate the incentives that the actor, the president, has to try to pursue his goals or her goals unilaterally. And so I think it's become very much a tool of policymaking, and it really is going to require Congress and not the courts to begin to rein in president power.
And just briefly, is it a bad thing if these are overused, if that power isn't reined in?
Well, I mean, I think in this particular episode, they were innovative ways to buy a little time after failed negotiations, but they do not make up for the permanency of federal law.
We'll leave it there, Daniel. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me again, Rob. Be well.
You too. Daniel Gitterman is a professor of public policy at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He's written a book on presidential power. It's called Calling the Shots, The President, Executive Orders, and Public Policy. You can weigh in on our conversation today over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We've been talking about the policy and politics of President Trump's most recent executive orders.